You're listening to CICK News.
Hi, my name is Lee Corneau. I live in Smithers. First, let me say thank you to everyone involved in the decision to make this warming shelter a reality. It is not an exaggeration to say that this building will save lives. Thank you for choosing to save lives. Thank you. It's been over a year since the death of Kirsten Patrick. Many of you may not know that name, but you may have witnessed Kirsten speak at a meeting held in this very room several years ago. I was there. I will never forget watching Kirsten walk up to this mic, and I will never forget hearing Kirsten beg for her right to exist, begging for a place in this town. I wonder if a warming shelter would have made the difference for her. I wonder who will be alive next year because this shelter exists. The last time I saw Kirsten alive was in this room, but it wasn't during that meeting. It was at a soup kitchen held each Sunday. We would chat about our kids and how old they were. Over the past few years, we have gotten to know many names and faces at soup kitchen. 2 weeks ago, Kirsten's uncle played with our kids right over there while we served soup for him and his friends. The people who use these services are amazing people. They deserve dignity, warmth, compassion, and love. When you show love to them, you show love to God. I challenge you to consider the people who will use the warming shelter as your neighbors and to perhaps ask yourself how you might want to be treated if you found yourself living outside in the winter. I consider myself a follower of Jesus, so I'll take a moment to address those in the room who do as well. For those of you who are Christians and oppose this warming shelter, I urge you to turn to the minor prophets, to the Gospels, and to the Acts, where you find the overwhelming message that our call is to care for the poor and the downtrodden. BV Harm Reduction Society, whether Christian or not, is answering the call of Christ to love our neighbors as ourselves. That chalkboard right over there says today's soup. It says hamburger or chicken. Broccoli cheddar or veggie chowder. Life or death. What's today's soup going to be?
That was Lee Cordon speaking at the town of Smithers Town Hall last month in the wake of a new temporary winter shelter opening in Smithers. For years, Smithers has been dealing with an increasing homelessness and poverty crisis. Earlier this year, through the Smithers homeless count, 77 people, up from 57 in 2023, were identified to be experiencing some level of homelessness in the community, either through couch surfing, sleeping outdoors, or in temporary units. The count, which was conducted by the Friendship Center, found that 84% of those surveyed were Indigenous. In April, only 9 shelter beds were available for those 77 people in Smithers, which prompted a new organization, the Bulkley Valley Harm Reduction Society, to apply to BC Housing for emergency shelter permit in an attempt to get more people off the streets during the frigid winter. However, as the process advanced, few people in Smithers, especially around the selected location of the shelter, knew what was going on. For some community members, it caught them off guard and went searching for clarity. That prompted the town of Smithers to host one of the largest meetings in the last decade to hear community concerns and support about the situation that only seems to be getting worse. Although the town of Smithers has already been in discussion with BC Housing for an additional supported housing facility that eventually will include an expanded emergency shelter, that is still a couple years out while more people show up on the streets unhoused. BV Harm Reduction received funding in October for a temporary winter shelter with 8 beds at the old Fabrications building at 3rd and Queen Street, which opened its doors in November and was full within the first day. Clearly, there is a need for these types of supports in a small community like Smithers, which no one is denying. However, property owners of the adjacent buildings have some reservations about the lack of communication and consultation with the community before the shelter was approved. Dr. Volter Morkel is a family physician in Smithers and has recently built and moved into a new office right next door to the emergency shelter. Although he supports the efforts by the BV Harm Reduction Society to get people off the streets, especially during winter, he doesn't support the ongoing drug use from those that may be housed at the low barrier shelter and would have appreciated more communication from the BVHR and BC Housing. As a physician, he also questions the low barrier shelter's effectiveness in alleviating the homelessness crisis in Smithers.
First off, I want to say, you know, we're not insensitive to people struggling. I see the effects of drug use every day in the work that I do. And it's hard to see people slowly deteriorate over time, overdose after overdose. And it just seems like the system, the people, the family, can't help these people. And I think since I've moved to Canada 15 years ago, this problem, especially in BC, has just escalated. If you look at the numbers, there's more homeless now. Every year there's more homeless people. Every year there's more overdose deaths. So unfortunately, the systems that we have in place currently are failing these people. And I think it's time that we come up with a different game plan. And what that looks like in the long run is very difficult to determine. But clearly the path that we're on right now is not working. As for transparency specifically and consultation around this process as a neighbor, I can emphatically tell you that there was absolutely no consultation. I heard about the clinic or the shelter coming in from one of our patients, I think. I went to the town council. They didn't even really know. In fact, they sent me to the brain injury place downtown. They thought they were opening up here. So it took me a few days to even figure out who was going to run it. And then I came across the website of BV Harm Reduction. On the website, they had a phone number that you could call and ask a question or two. I phoned them. A couple days went by. Never heard anything back. Then I wrote an email to the website, that was on the website. Didn't hear anything. And then I walked over and they were working in there, and I started asking some questions and asking them what the plan was and how the planning has gone and why they are doing this. So I initiated consultation, not the other way around.
Morkel, this is not the first time around that this town has been having these discussions. We have a homeless camp that is across the street from town council. It's been there for quite some time now, several years. It was originally supposed to be a temporary overnight sheltering area, but it seems to be more and more permanent. There is also a project that is being negotiated, going through the motions with approvals and whatnot on Alfred Avenue behind town council that would incorporate an emergency warming shelter, and would be also some beds for folks that are experiencing some of these issues, homelessness and whatnot. And it seems like there was no communication, a very basic communication, even though that those lines of communication are open on other subjects. There's also already a group in town that has been working on this type of thing, but it sounds like it's a done deal, and it'll be here until March, the end of March. One of the other things we talked about was you're a medical professional. You've seen lots of this over time. You know, what do you feel needs to happen that we can start seeing less deaths, that we can start seeing less of the drug use in these communities, especially in the north, where we do deal with one thing that the south doesn't really deal with, which is harsh winters?
Yeah, Dan, that's a very difficult question. What I will tell you is the numbers, I think, speak for themselves. So I think whatever we're doing now is not working. I, there's patient-doctor confidentiality, so I can't give out names, but I had two patients that were very involved with drug use and drug dealing between Smithers and Houston. They lived in the encampment. They lived in Goodacre Place. They were homeless at times. And I saw these two gentlemen who I would, you know, almost say we had friendships, deteriorate over time. One guy specifically, he actually lived just outside of town, and so he would get his, you know, social assistance check. He would have to somehow come to town. He would party for a few days, get to kind of rock bottom and go home. He was still sort of semi-functioning. Then when he went to Goodacre Place, this was around COVID, there was more money. He got a lot of clean supply, which he sold, which means he made more money. So all that money then just went into fentanyl use, and rapidly things deteriorated. He just did more and more and more drugs. And then around that time, they legalized open drug use. And that's when, for the first time in my life, I actually experienced people smoking crack and using drugs in the hospital in shared rooms with other people, which I found shocking, really, to tell you the truth. And it was very difficult to find proper recourse. We couldn't just shut it down, because at that stage it was essentially legal. It was illegal to smoke in the hospital, but it happened because of the lax rules. And so I'm not saying recriminalize drugs, but I think there has to be more rules set in place for safety and other reasons. These two gentlemen that I'm talking about now, you know, before they would be admitted, and when you get admitted, it's because you're down and out. You've burnt every relationship you've had, couch surfing, you've been kicked out of Goodacre. They would end up in hospital with peptic ulcers and things that we could treat. We would give them IV fluids. We would detox them a little bit. And on day three or day four, day five, a glimmer of the real person would come out, and you can actually have a conversation with them, and you could ask questions, and they would tell you about their first girlfriend and a job that they had and a life that they had. And there was this one day period where you could bring up, in my opinion, where you could bring up rehab. But then, you know, by the next day they'd feel better, they're bored, and they were gone. And they would go back to the drug cycle. But at least it was a 1 week clean out. My experience now and during COVID was, and when they legalized it, was that they would actually use more drugs in the hospital than I think they would use outside. And I think that's partly because the nurses are cleaning them, giving them food, giving them blankets, washing them. They had no responsibility for anything other than finding and using drugs. So what used to be a clean out week, or maybe an opportunity to get somebody to rehab, has now fallen apart and has just become an increased drug use week. Mm-hmm. And I give you those examples because I think those are good examples of where the system and the deregulation is not working. I understand why we're deregulating drugs, and I'm not saying we should recriminalize small amounts, but I think there has to be, in my opinion, more rules around it. And I think we need to keep the public safe too. Both of those cases, the people that were sharing the rooms with them, I don't think were safe. I had concerns for their safety, and there's protocols in place and we went through the protocols, but I don't think people are aware how common and widespread it has become, you know. And it's unfortunate that we're not even helping the guys when they're in hospital anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you don't want to sound like a, like you don't want overregulation, you don't want to decriminalize, but there needs to be regulation. And I feel like with this encampment here, or this shelter, that low barrier shelter, if there was time and we could have regulated, and if there was better communication, I think as a business owner and as a neighbor, They could have definitely reassured me more. But because there was absolutely zero consultation, and we didn't know what was happening, and we didn't know how it was going to happen and what they were going to do, I felt that we were definitely sort of left in the dark. Yeah.
Is there anything that you could see that would make things slightly better in terms of the communication, in terms of whatever happens with the evolution of this place going forward? And of course, you know, the town and these services, these service providers that seem to that not kind of be in the know. The town seemed like they were a little bit taken aback at this as well. And that it happened very quickly. What would you like to see happen in the interim while this is going on to ensure public safety? And also that at the end of the day, as you mentioned, that some of these people who are using the service do get long-term housing and can find a path forward that doesn't end up back on the street and dying from drugs.
Yeah, I think what I should do here, I'm going to read you a few stats if we have time, if you will let me allow me to do that. The stat here says that in 2023, there was 458 reported deaths among individuals experiencing homelessness, and that number of deaths went up by 23% from the previous year. I feel like from a communication point of view, that we've dropped the ball. I think we should have prepared better. I think there are significant risks to, you know, obviously drug users using a low barrier shelter. There are risks to the community. As you aforementioned, there's lots of kids walking by here. We now have this smoking tent up there that I think is for smoking cigarettes and marijuana, but also hard drugs. And none of those things I want to expose kids to. I don't want to expose kids to secondhand smoke. You know, inhalation vapors from crack pipes, drug paraphernalia, needles and crack pipes spilling over onto the neighboring properties. I haven't been entirely reassured on how they're going to protect the public. And I haven't been entirely reassured on how they're going to protect people from, you know, drug users in that building. I don't know these people. I don't know if they've had training. I don't know if they, you know, have any medical experience. I don't know if they know how to de-escalate, you know, potentially belligerent or psychotic patients. I don't know how our building is going to be kept safe from that either. I certainly think because of the lack of communication, there's already been quite a bit of harm done to our building. As a business owner, we have one tenant upstairs that's potentially moving out because of this. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if people start moving out, if it would be easy to get people to move back in, you know, because I think there's, and even if the fears, you know, people are saying, oh, there's no problem, there's not going to be an issue, but it's still a perceived problem. And I think if there was proper communication, we could have potentially avoided this, you know. You know, but I just think zero communication, just popping this thing up overnight with very little planning. And I think there's a lot of talk about the potential benefits. And I think those are clear. I personally actually would support a warming shelter downtown. I would even support a warming shelter in this space. But I cannot support open drug use. I cannot support zero communication. And zero consultation. Those are the things that I'm frustrated with.
Shortly after the news broke that an emergency winter shelter was going into the old fabrications location, Sharon Hartwell, the conservative MLA for Bulkley Valley Stikine, posted to her Facebook page about the concern and frustration she and others felt about the speed and lack of transparency during the development of the shelter. Sharon, as you know, we recently heard that there's going to be an emergency shelter going into the old fabrications building. And there's been a lot of questions about what is happening, why it's happening so quickly. It sounds like it's temporary, so between now and March 31st. But it sounds like a lot of people were a bit blindsided by this. You put out
a statement, a press release, bringing attention to this. Tell me a little about what some of your concerns and what concerns you've been hearing from people in the community.
Well, I think the biggest concern for me and people in the community is that they were not aware that this was going to be happening. And I don't think anybody's upset about a warming shelter as it was supposed to be, as was stated. But when I received correspondence from people in the area, there was concerns about what that entailed. First of all, it was going to be somebody to go in and just, you know, warm up and have something to eat and then go, which is fine. Then there was an addition of overnight guests, and then also it was said that there was going to be a tent outside so they could have a safe place or a dry place to do their have their medication, drugs, whatever words we're going to use for that. So there was concern in the area for that. And it's not a residential neighborhood, but it's bordering a residential neighborhood. But I think the big concern is that nobody sort of knew this was coming. And if this was going to be what the community wanted, then the community should have been involved in the discussion on that. When I received correspondence here, I reached out to find out what was happening, and I didn't have any information. The Harm Reduction Society was new to me, and I would welcome a conversation with them. So supporting a place where people can go in and have something to eat and get warm is just fine. But we need to know that that's what's going to be the case. And I think when I'm thinking about the seniors in Bulkley Lodge, but this is happening right across the province, you know, I wouldn't think it would take $700,000 to renovate a small kitchen in there for people to go in and have a light lunch and then go back outside. I wouldn't think it would cost that much money. So what really, nobody sees the contract, nobody knows where the money's coming from or what's entailed in that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's going to be cuts in healthcare across the province for long-term care facilities, which is very deeply concerning. And also, I think the message that I truly want to send is that these people need help. They don't need Band-Aid measures, they need help. We need, there's no detox beds in the area. I think there's one in Terrace, one. Been talking about this for like 30 years. So at what point is the government going to start to put decent resources into what's needed in the communities with mental health professionals and a place for these people to get actual help? You know, I think that's the big concern that I'm hearing, and obviously for myself as well. Yes, these people need help. They need to be hand up, for sure. So let's do it the proper way.
Gladys Attrill is the mayor of Smithers and is all too familiar with the current situation. The temporary overnight shelter area, also known as the homeless encampment across from Town Hall, was erected in 2021 during COVID. In 2023, Smithers Council approved a bylaw that would allow the camp to remain at Veterans Peace Park. One winter, a trailer was placed next to the camp to act as the warming shelter, but 5 years on, the town continues to struggle to find a long-term solution for homelessness in Smithers. But as Attrill points out, almost every community across Canada, big and small, are dealing with a similar situation with no apparent solution in sight.
Yeah, well, I guess by way of background, I think, you know, most people in Smithers and the Bulkley Valley are aware of, you know, the homeless encampment in Smithers. And so for quite a long time, we at the town have been trying to work with anyone who will work with us in terms the situation better, including with BC Housing for support housing and shelter space. So that's something that's going on and has been for a while. You know, we did learn in the last while here that there is a new not-for-profit, relatively new not-for-profit in Smithers, the Bulkley Valley Harm Reduction Society, who wanted to create a 24-hour shelter, more extensive shelter in the community, and as any not-for-profit can do, reached out to BC Housing for funding. And so in the last while, the society was able to secure a space, you referenced it, the old fabrications building, and was able to connect with BC Housing on the allocation of some funding. So that's kind of where we're at. And yeah, so then concerns and positions on all sides have become public more recently. Folks that are worried about what might happen, how did it come to be, what might be the impacts of a shelter, and many people saying, you know, we do need to have a shelter space and are supporting. So it's sort of a full spectrum reaction, as one might expect.
You mentioned there that it was a third party proponent, a non-profit that is pulling this together. When did the town hear about this? When did council hear about this? Is this relatively new, or is this something that, as you mentioned, has been in the works, or you've known that it's been in the works for a while?
In terms of actually being aware that there had been an application made, that's fairly recent. I'm already losing track of time, but within the last couple of weeks, for sure. Early in the year, there had been, you know, some chatter that there was a new organization in town that was interested in providing service. That was just talk. And so in terms of reality for the town, for council, that's been quite recent, you know, from understanding that there was an application for a building permit, and then hearing from residents and business owners around there. So it went from, you know, sort of a realization that something's going on to being in the middle of the, you know, the concerns that are being expressed all sides right now. Yeah. But it wasn't, you know, I think, you know, some of what I'm hearing and reading is that people that are concerned about what a shelter might bring feel like there might have been something hidden, and that just isn't true. So, you know, anyone in the community can look for a piece of property and consider what they might do on it. Businesses do it, residents do it. So I understand that a shelter has different sorts of connotations for people. So I realize truly why this is a concern, both sides, people who feel it's desperately needed and folks who are really worried about what might happen in their neighborhoods. I do understand that. You know, as council, we've been across the street from the encampment, now going into our fifth winter. It's been very hard in the community. It's hard on people who live rough. It's hard on the businesses and the residents nearby. So truly, council understands the reaction of people all around. And we're just, you know, we're working with our staff and the proponent, figuring out what's actually being proposed, what is permitted, and we're just going through that process. So for now, I think that's where we are on the town side. We're just going through it. There's a process in play where anyone is able to make an application to the town. There'll be building code, etc., things to deal with, and we'll see where it lands. And of course, it's going very quickly.
During the first few days of operation, I had a chance to talk with Billy Kennedy, the shelter manager, about how the Bulkley Valley Harm Reduction Society was dealing with the concerns of the community, neighbors, and their hopes for the much-needed emergency shelter, even after it closes its doors on March 31st, 2026.
We're a group of friends and community members, and we actually connected and came together through informal mutual aid type supports. A lot of us were doing support work for folks who were at the encampment, bringing donations of food and clothes that we collected and other winter supplies. So we connected that way and started coordinating support we were offering to folks who were staying out there. And then we thought that by incorporating as a society, we could bring some more structure to the work that we were doing and look at helping to fill in some of the gaps in the community right now. There are so many amazing other service organizations doing work. But speaking to folks, we noticed there was a need for after-hours support and more places that are warm for people to go during winter or on the weekends or after hours. So we thought we could come together and start to look at ways to fill some of those gaps. And so we incorporated in November last year and then have been doing little projects since then. And this is the first sort of major funded project that we've been working on together.
What are some of the other things that you're trying to do?
We've been coordinating meals. So on public holidays and weekends and times when the food programs in town are closed, we've been organizing cooking and serving big meals at the camp. We've been going around after the fire that happened at the encampment. We collected a list of immediate needs and fundraised and did a big supply distribution effort around that. And then we've been helping people with rides and laundry and getting places safely as well.
How has been the response that you've witnessed and that the Harm Reduction Society has witnessed? How's the response been from the community so far? A lot of the questions, you know, that I've heard is that this just came up really quickly and people were kind of taken aback because they didn't really know that this was happening.
Yes. Well, they're correct. It came up really quickly. So originally, after last winter, we'd been doing some support over the winter, and it was pretty confronting being faced with the effect that the cold was having on folks that we were supporting and people that we cared for. And so we came together after the winter and wanted to talk about what we could do to support this year. And I had heard that BC Housing sometimes offered funding for emergency weather response when things get really, really cold, for opening up emergency warming spots or warming shelters. And so we reached out to BC Housing probably in March or April, just starting that discussion, seeing what they had available and what could work. And then they suggested we look into temporary winter shelters. And so over the summer, we put in an application to be qualified as a housing operator for BC Housing. They put out a public kind of call out RFPQ process for nonprofits to become qualified. And we applied, and then sort of summer went by and things were in process. We started reaching out to other service organizations in the community and the town itself and saying, this is something we're interested in. Yeah. Of course, it's a bit hard right now because there's no confirmation that we're qualified and there's no funding that's been allocated to the region yet. But like, we are interested and we're looking into it. And then things were kind of quiet for a while, and we started to think about other things we could do to support this winter. And then in mid-October, actually, we got confirmation that we'd qualified and that funds had been allocated to the region. So at that time, we had a few short weeks where we were like, okay, we can make this work. We can pull together and really find a way to make this work, because at that point, like, the cold was already encroaching upon us. And the building that was compliant with local zoning for this purpose and available for lease was the old fabrications building at 3892 Third Ave. So we signed a lease for the building and reached out to everyone we'd been talking to earlier in the year, other organizations and folks at the town we'd been meeting with throughout the year. And then we let them know that we had the green light and we would work to try and make this happen as quickly as possible to get folks out of the cold. And we recognize that there's been some contention because of that timeline, and as part of our operating, we really value being as transparent about the process now that things are confirmed and going ahead as we can. We've been responding to every neighbor who's reached out to us and meeting with every neighbor who's interested in learning more about our operations or the ways that we're focusing on keeping the neighborhood safe, responding to concerns and if need be, adjusting our operations around that.
I guess, you know, on that, you know, one of the, here, let's just step over here. I guess on that, one of the, you know, the concerns that I was told was that some of the neighbors had to reach out to you first to find out what was going on. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, through BC Housing and whatnot, that they, they say that, oh, we're in communication with the neighbors wherever something like this, a project is like this is built. But that didn't seem the case. You know, one neighbor, you know, had to come to you guys to kind of find out what was going on. Do you think it should have been the other way around?
So emergency shelters like this one typically don't go through formal consultation processes because they are temporary, and because they come together based on urgency of conditions and availability of space. Having said that, and because this building was compliant with zoning, so it didn't need to go through a temporary use permit application, having said that, responding to neighborhood feedback is very important to us. And every single neighbor who's reached out, we've replied within a few hours and made ourselves available. We've had ongoing conversations with everyone who's available, who's wanting to chat with us. And we have a number for the staff on shift that we've passed out to every neighbor with concerns. And we've said directly, if there is an issue or you have a concern, you can call us and we'll respond immediately. If there's any rubbish in the area or if there's a disturbance, call us and we want to be able to respond. It's really a priority for us. Yeah. We had one neighbor come to the space who'd reached out an hour earlier by email, and we had a nice chat with him, and we've had an ongoing email conversation since then.
Yeah, with the neighbor.
Mm-hmm, yeah. With the neighbor.
I guess judging from that meeting the other night, it sounded like most people who spoke, were supportive of something like this. Obviously, nobody wants to see, folks in the cold, freezing, losing limbs or getting frostbite or something like that. But on the same note, the issue of drug use was also brought up, and especially having the tent out back. And just people's concerns around, just open drug use in general, and that is also an issue that needs to be dealt with. And although that this is a warming shelter to get people out of the cold, it's not, it's low barrier, and it's not stopping or helping to reduce the drug use. What would you say to some of those comments that we heard the other night?
Yeah, I'll say first off, I know there's been some rumors out there that we're a safe supply site, and those rumors are untrue. We're not providing any substances. We're a low barrier shelter, which means no one is disqualified from accessing our services based on their substance use status alone. Yeah. We think having protection from the cold and having supports and basic human needs met is everyone's right, regardless of their substance use status. Having said that, we're not encouraging drug use by any means. We're simply accepting the reality that some of the folks who are looking to access our services do use drugs. And with that in mind, we're safety planning around how we can keep those folks safe and the broader community safe. And we're not encouraging drug use in open areas for those who are using. We're engaging in collaborative safety planning, and we're in ongoing deep conversation with several contacts and consultants at Northern Health in regards to our policy and planning. I know that there's discussions around that we have built a safe inhalation tent, and we have no plans to build a safe inhalation tent. We have a designated smoking area, which is 6 meters away from air intakes and doorways and opening windows of the building, because we do recognize that some of the folks accessing the shelter smoke, and neighbors have brought up concerns about increased traffic and loitering in the area. Yeah. And so this was a problem-solving effort to give people a place to smoke outside while also being responsive to neighbor feedback. And that area is built according to nicotine inhalation guidelines around smoking areas, and that spot is also under 24/7 camera monitoring, which is like monitored by staff inside and regular cleanups and safety checks.
Of course, we're just walking around here, and things seem pretty quiet. We just walked by the shelter, but it's also obviously noticeably chilly.
and you know, just holding this microphone, my hands already feeling it. This is only November. We still have a ways to go to get into the deep cold and the deep winter. You mentioned that this is only going on until March as a temporary shelter. After March, are you hoping, is the hope to get some of these folks into long-term stable housing, knowing that we do have a growing homelessness population in Smithers?
100%. So this project is a temporary fix to a really large structural issue, and we're not pretending that we have all the answers to addressing this huge structural issue. Our priority is keeping folks safe and warm this winter, but we have many partners in different service organizations that we are working together to connect folks with, and in March we're planning to have a big effort on planning pathways for all the guests at the space in terms of where they go next, other supports they'll have access to once the shelter is closed. So a big part of our program is referrals and other community supports and making that accessible to folks.
I know that there, you know, have been and already are other groups that are working on this. You know, there's organization, excuse me, there's an organization that is facilitating the Good Acre Place, also working on building another version of that eventually in the next couple of years that will have an emergency shelter built into it. What kind of funding did you guys get for this project in particular, and are you working with any other groups now and post March to make sure that stuff like this continues on, or that folks are housed, and that we actually, you know, work towards decreasing the homelessness population?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So our main focus right now is running this temporary winter shelter from mid-November, well, it's open now, until the end of March. So that's where all our energy and time is going. And as I said, this is a 5 month or a 4.5 month long project. And we have no immediate plans beyond that for operating something like this, beyond wanting to be flexible and adaptable to the needs that come up around us, and wanting to maintain good relationships with the people that we're working to provide services for and other services in the community. It's amazing and so much needed that there is a new facility being built that can be permanent to provide this kind of support to folks. Yeah. And we're really in support of that initiative and that long-term plan for Smithers.
I know, because the question came up the other night, and as I mentioned, you know, there are other organizations working on stuff like this. What kind of funding did you get from BC Housing to establish this project?
The funding number itself is a private number. The numbers that have been thrown around in the media aren't accurate. Again, there's a lot of misinformation and rumors out there. I will say that it's enough to provide 24-hour staffing throughout the winter. And provide meals and a warm place to be for people. It's adequate funding to run a place like this safely and with planning and foresight.
You know, you mentioned it, you have a number of staff. What is the number of staff that you have, and, you know, what are the qualifications? Are some of these folks that have come in social workers that are already established in the community?
Yeah, good question. It's a mix of folks coming together on this project. Some of us have professional experience working in this area in outreach and harm reduction and other social services, experience working at other shelters and programs. And other of our staff are community members who are working in other fields, community members who have their own lived experience of homelessness or substance use, and so bring that added empathy and experience and skill set to the role. All of our staff have completed naloxone and overdose response training, That's a really key priority for us in being able to respond effectively and quickly and safely to anything that might come up. And one staff on every shift holds a standard first aid certificate and food safe. And there is a lot of other training that we're planning and working to get accessible in the next month for our staff, including de-escalation and crisis response training and peer support training for our peer staff. And yeah, initially our plans were to have 25 beds open for folks who may need them. And if that were to become the case this winter, we would be working to hire a third staff member to be on site at all times.
Just the last thing for you, Billy. You know, obviously, as I mentioned earlier, you know, this is a bit of a contentious subject in a small community, but, you know, this issue in particular, homelessness, taking care of you know, vulnerable people, it's happening everywhere. It's in every community, especially in the north. It seems to be more pronounced because we have, you know, limited services. Also, when you live in a small town, this is more visible in general. What is your message to community members, you know, who came out to that meeting the other night, or others who, you know, are still being quiet? What's your message to them going forward over the next few months with the temporary warming shelter?
Yeah, I think if you have concerns or feedback, please reach out to us. We've been really appreciating all the conversations we've had. We've been in conversation with over 25 neighbors and nearby residents, and we're very open to that, and we love hearing support and constructive feedback. And I think we all recognize that Smithers winters can be dangerously cold, and I think common ground that we all share is that no one should be left outside in the cold, and there are questions around the best way to do that. And I know that people have different opinions and feelings, and I think focusing on the ground that we do share and ways that we can approach that question together constructively rather than causing more divides among the community is the best path forward.
Billy, thank you so much for your time today. We'll stay in touch.
Thank you, Dan.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or check us out on the web at smithersradio.com. CICK News has been made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to my colleague Pam Hassan and all of our roving journalists, I'm Daniel Messick. Thanks for listening.